Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. We will conduct a question-and-answer session during the conference. To request to ask a question, you may press star one. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I will now turn today's meeting over to your host, Sean Wilson. You may begin.
Thanks, Aubrey, and good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the monthly IT Technical Assistance Conference call, and thank you for your attendance this afternoon. We have with us today Karen Vendetti, Kelly Canestrari, and Cheryl Masalunas from the Collaborative, as well as Dr. Mary Smith, Brock Dunlap, and Leanne Reinert from DMH. There are several announcements to be made prior to the call for this afternoon, so I'd like to turn the line over to Dr. Mary Smith at this time. Mary?
Thank you, Sean. Hi, everybody. Just a couple of announcements and reminders before we open the call up. I think that a number of you may have become aware of an issue with the RINs that were being issued through the eRIN system. I think it probably started around the 29th of June. We became aware of it after obtaining some information from DHS. So what happened is that the eRIN system started to erroneously assign some RINs starting with 97. And so if you tried to use those RINs to then register with the Collaborative or take any other action, you got a rejection. We have been told that the eRIN system has been corrected. Fortunately, DHS was able to put a hold on about 1,500 requests, so those didn't go out. But we understand that some providers did receive RINs back with a 97. If you receive those, then you need to contact directly Jay Hidalgo at the DHS eRIN section and request a correction. And so you'll have to contact him directly as opposed to using the eRIN system and then asking for another RIN assignment. So I don't have his number in front of me, but I'll bring it up and I'll repeat it or I'll give it to you before the end of the call so that you have it. I think most of you already have it. But just wanted to make sure people are aware of that if they received any of those 97 RINs. I know there have been also questions about the service definition reimbursement guide. Hopefully all of you have signed up to receive the HFS notices about community mental health services. If you did, you got a notice from the HFS webmaster late last week saying that the service definition reimbursement guide had been posted on the HFS Community Mental Health page. DMH will also be putting a link up to that guide if it's not up already. And so, again, for those of you who had questions about when that guide would be posted, it is posted and up. We have become aware of at least one error in the guide that relates to prior authorization of community support residential. I think that box is checked. That's incorrect, and that will be corrected. We are expecting another version of the service definition reimbursement guide probably to be posted, I'm going to say, sometime next week. HFS is working on that now and hopes to turn that around fairly fast. Let's see, what else? The NPIs, you know, just a reminder, there was a notice that was sent out back in November that was co-signed by HFS and DMH, basically reminding providers that they needed a unique NPI for each site. So there was also, I think, a second provider notice sent, and then DMH sent a communication alert out as a reminder. If you have not taken care of that, then be sure to attend to it, because if you don't have a unique NPI for each site, your claims will be rejected. If you have questions about that, please refer to the provider notice or contact HFS directly. Let's see. In terms of claims that are being submitted, 7-1 forward, one of the things that DMH and also the Collaborative reminded agencies of when we first started to accept claims is that there's an expectation that agencies submit their usual and customary charges, which may not be exactly the same as the allowed payment. What we've noticed in terms of looking at claims is that many of the usual and customary charges appear to be exactly the same as the allowed amount. So just take this as a reminder, you know, it is important and you must really comply in terms of submitting your usual and customary charges. I know that there are also questions about the TA calls that HFS is scheduling to review claim submission issues and provide TA on that topic. Those calls will begin this Wednesday morning and will run from 9:30 to 11. I think they're scheduled for the next 7 or 8 weeks on a weekly basis. HFS will be sending a communication out to providers. They will be posting the schedule on the website, and then DMH will also get that information out as a communication alert. I don't have the phone number yet, but I expect that to be posted shortly. And again, we'll send it out, and then HFS will be sending that information out as well. Let's see, IL2 errors. I'm going to ask Kelly of the Collaborative to talk about those. Kelly?
Thanks, Mary. I just wanted to go over and reiterate the reason for those denials, for the IL2 denial reason code. We're still receiving a number of inquiries with providers wondering why the claim is denying for registration when, in fact, the consumer has registration on file. If you remember correctly, back in the fall, there was an adjustment or a change to the benefits whereby the ABC registration was further broken down into three other categories, three different benefit packages. That change resulted in services that were normally covered now being denied for no registration. So it's going to be very important for you to check the service matrix and look at the procedure code you're billing for. Cross-reference that with the benefit package that your consumer has. And if it's not indicated on the service matrix as coverable, the claim is going to come through and you will receive a denial for no registration on file. We understand that there's registration on file. However, that further breaks down to look at the benefit package that the consumer has. And it's very important, again, that the benefit package that the consumer has provide benefits for those services that you're billing. You may also want to just consult that before you bill the services or even before you render the services to your consumer, just to make sure of what benefit package they have and what services are included in that.
Thanks, Kelly.
You're welcome.
Sean, the only other thing I will mention, I think during the training that we did with HFS, we mentioned that there would be some change to the pseudo-RIN structure. And so those we expect to have that pseudo-RIN information posted sometime later this week as well. So with that, Sean, I think unless anyone else has announcements, we're ready to go to Q&As.
All right, Mary, thank you. Aubrey, we're now ready to open the line to Q&A.
We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. You will be prompted to record your name. Please make sure your phone is unmuted and record your name slowly and clearly. To withdraw your request, you may press star 2. Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1. One moment, please, as we wait for questions to queue. And our first question comes from Danelle Bowen. Your line is now open.
Yes, I just wanted to clarify the errors that we had or rejects that we've had with value options that had been entered into value options. Is it correct that we now need to address those errors with HFS staff? And if so, who do we contact regarding that?
Were the claims rejected?
Well, some of them, I mean, some of them have rejected. Some of them haven't paid correctly as far as the correct amount. I have some clients who we have proof of a medical card, but, you know, the service isn't being paid. I have some clients who, you know, receiving, you know, benefits of services paying when they probably shouldn't. So, I mean, I have, you know, a variety of different errors that we've had throughout the year.
Well, if you have claims that have been rejected and you need to resubmit them, those you would resubmit directly to HFS.
Okay, what do I do about ones that are in the system but didn't pay correctly?
I guess I'm not sure what pay correctly means.
Well, I mean, maybe an example would be the client was supposed to have been charged a copay and the service was paid in full. Or I have maybe one that where a copay was charged and it should have, you know, been paid and, you know, not had a copayment deducted.
Kelly, it seems to me the best thing to do might be to have this lady call the claims help desk. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, we can take a look at them always, but as
well, you... Well, I mean, Kelly, you have my spreadsheet already, so...
I do, and we've adjusted everything prior that we could prior to July 1st. July 1st, we can't even go in and adjust a claim.
Oh, okay, well, then I just need to know, who would I contact then with HFS?
Well, did you attend the training?
Yes.
Did you attend the training that we did with HFS?
Yes. I mean, is it still that same department?
Yep. So it's the, I would contact the HFS Bureau of Comprehensive Health Services.
Okay.
At 877-782-5565.
Okay. I have a couple other questions, too. Are you providing support today on how to put data into the new HFS system, or do we wait and do that on the Wednesday morning call-in?
Wednesday morning.
Okay, thank you. That's all I have then.
Thanks.
And the next question comes from Tina Reed. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon. I have two questions. My first question has to do with the IL-2. I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand, Kelly, what you were saying, that if the person has the benefit package is now being broken down three more times, and after that I kind of got lost in your explanation.
Okay. If you go to the service matrix, you'll see as you go over, it's in, I believe, right in the middle of the matrix, you'll see, you know, where the funding is broken down. You'll see ABC, and then within the ABC, it'll be broken down three times. For example, there will be a column with 000E, another with 000T. Those are the different benefit packages that have been broken down.
And we need to make sure that the client has one of those benefit packages, even though it has been the registration is at the collaborative.
Right. We may have registration on file. However, mm-hmm. the benefit package that your consumer falls into may not provide benefits for the services that you're providing. And so you want to make sure if they are in a limited benefit package, you want to just go through and double-check what services are payable within that package itself.
And okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. It'll eliminate you billing for services that can't be reimbursed or rendering services that you're not going to be reimbursed for.
Okay. And if I need someone to kind of walk me through and help me to understand that a little bit better, I do have to contact HFS, you're saying?
Nope, we're still going to, we can identify which benefit package and we can still take a look at the registrations for you and what we have on file that
okay.
We can do. If it concerns a claim that was submitted and processed after July 1st, then you'd need to speak with HFS about that. We can't speak to how they've processed a claim.
But if it's a claim that is before July 1, I can still get in contact with you.
Absolutely.
Okay. And the second question that I had was, you just gave a number for us if we needed to contact someone at HFS, and I didn't get all of that number, 877-787.
Nope, it's Mary. It's 877-782-5565. You press 0 and ask for a community mental health support consultant.
That's
and for those of you who hopefully attended the training, that information is posted on the HFS website with a list of contacts. So be sure to check out that page.
Okay, thank you so much.
Sure.
And our next question comes from Gong Ming. Your line is now open.
Yes, Kelly, I just want to say a few words more about this IL-2 error. You're exactly right that the IL-2 indicates the services submitted not being eligible for the client's population group. Okay. But we do find a situation like that. In our system, we actually perform the validation check before we submit the claim. So we decide in our system, actually validate each services and to see whether they are actually covered by DHS. So once you get out of our system, I would say a great percentage, 90% or even more, the client's services should be, covered. We do find a situation like this. I think that one time, the file exchange between the collaborative and HFS, has some issues. Quite a few clients, quite a few Medicaid clients, with the claims approved before, suddenly receive lots of IL-2 errors. So we have Robin, my staff, had to contact you, and you're fix them, one by one for us. So for the users, who are currently I work with, they still encounter some situations like this. Yeah, that means the client who used to be a Medicaid client and who has, certain services like community support get approved in the past, but then suddenly, the services get rejected with IL-2. So I've been instructing them to actually, contact you in these situations, and because you can fix them, from the back door.
Absolutely fine.
Okay, I want to thank you for doing that. All the 25 clients we have in this situation, you already fixed for us, and that's actually save thousands of dollars. Thank you for doing that.
You're welcome.
And at this time, I show no further questions in queue.
Aubrey, we'll wait a few moments to see if any other questions come through.
Yeah, Sean, while we're waiting, let me just give folks Jay Hidalgo's phone number in case they need to contact him with regard to those RINs that start with 97. The number is 800-385-0872.
And the next question comes from Duane Lottie. Your line is now open.
Thank you very much. Actually, this question has to do with claims that were paid last year. If we discovered additional billings that should have been submitted for the same date for those claims on a similar service, on the same service, how do we go about voiding the old claims? Do we have to submit that through HFS to void the old claims and then resubmit the new claim, or do we need to contact someone at the collaborative to void the old claims? These are claims that have been paid, probably about 4 or 5 months old.
It's Mary. HFS has all of that information. You would have to void the claims through HFS and then resubmit them to HFS.
Okay, so they're going to know the claim number?
What we've done is we've worked with HFS and given the collaborative has provided historical claims information to HFS. And so they have all of the detail of claims that have been submitted. So just as a reminder, going forward, if folks are submitting claims regardless of service date or if you need to make adjustments on previously paid claims, they need to be submitted to HFS.
All right, thank you. And then just one other quick question. With regards to, and we're just following up with this, with regards to the modifiers that are attached to the HCPCS codes, there is no requirement for a specific order in terms of those modifiers being submitted to HFS. Those can be submitted in any order to HFS, correct?
HFS has said it doesn't matter. The order doesn't matter. So you're correct. You can pose that question again on Wednesday if you like.
Could I get that number again for the Wednesday call, please?
I don't have the number yet. It will occur from 9:30 to 11. HFS will be sending a notice out to community mental health providers, and DMH will also send out a communication alert once we get it. Just wanted to give you guys a heads up of when it's scheduled.
Okay. And then just one last question. When will be the last date that we would expect any last remittance advice from the collaborative with regards to claims that are submitted prior to July 1st?
Well, if we have the claims here, when was the last batch that you submitted to us?
I'm not exactly sure of the last date, but I know it was really close to the end of the month. It was probably the 29th or the 30th. So I'm just asking when we would know when we can kind of check from our perspective to know that the last claim should have been processed through.
Assuming that there were no problems with it, and again, we don't have any claims personnel on the call with us, I don't think, but we just went through the 4th of July holiday. I would check next week.
Okay.
You can always contact us, through the claims customer service just, to check.
Okay, I just didn't know if you had a target date for processing all claims.
To my knowledge, I don't believe that we do, but we have usually less than a 30-day turnaround time from when it comes into us and we've processed the claim, I believe. But you want to just, you can run a report on the website or you can contact our claims customer service, and they can always, check a few claims for you if you know you've submitted them towards the end of the month in June, which consumers you've submitted the claims for. You can always give us a call, and one of the claim reps can check a few of the consumers for you that way.
Okay. And I'm going to ask just one other question. I don't know if you can answer it yet or not. I know just based upon experience that sometimes we have claims for various reasons, they end up going through the court of claims process because at the end of the state year need to be submitted through the court of claims process. If we're processing these claims now through from July 1st forward, and are we still going to go through the court of claims process for any claims that aren't submitted for payment and need to be processed to the court of claims? Are those going to go through DMH, or are all claims still just going to be submitted through HFS for any outstanding bills?
It's Mary. If you have anything to submit after July 1st, it's got to go through HFS.
Right. Okay. So then court of claims is not going to apply.
That might be beyond the scope of this call. Brock,
okay.
Do you have any thoughts on this?
I just know that in history that there's ended up being claims that we have billings that because of one reason or another, because they've either been taking so long to process through or based upon rejections and resubmissions, have fallen beyond either the year to date to submit or has been there's just been other issues that have arisen that made us have to go through the court of claims process to get those paid.
And this is beyond the 1 year? Like on the Medicaid claims, you have a year from the date of service.
Right, Medicaid claims, I understand, you have a year of date of service. And so in the DHS, supposedly we have a year of date of service as well.
Right.
But the problem is that we've had to go through court of claims or get claims paid that weren't submitted either by like August 15th for certain programs, so that's why I'm asking.
Okay, then I have that. Are these fee-for-service claims?
They're fee-for-service claims. Some of them may be under like the ICG program, some may be under some other type of contractual program, but it may not be strictly.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, yeah, then you can, I mean, if you don't meet the timing requirement, you go through court claims.
Right.
And basically fill out the form and state why you think you should be paid for it.
Okay, that's still go through the court of claims. All right. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Information that we need.
And the next question comes from Christina Cuevas.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Your line is open, yes.
Hi. I was doing batch billing through the collaborative from before, and beginning in July, I was using the same collaborative system to enter into the data and then uploading it into HFS, and they have been rejected regarding Loop. I've tried to contact the collaborative directly as well as HFS, and no one seems to know how to help me to get this all straightened out. Are you aware of the issue, and is the software going to be updated so that it's compatible with HFS, or am I going to have to direct bill everything into HFS line by line instead of a batch?
It's Mary. HFS will accept batch billing. There were a couple of small changes to a couple of the loops. They covered that in the face-to-face training and the webinar training. I know that will be covered again on the Wednesday call, so I would encourage you to look for that notice and call in then. You can't use the collaborative software, however, to submit data to HFS. You'll have to, I believe you have to log into the MEDI system in order to be able to submit batch data, but again, the best folks to call for that would be HFS. And, you know, again, the number is 877-782-5565.
Okay, I've done that, and all of it, they said I could use the collaborative third-party software. It did upload, and that wasn't the problem. It's just that it wasn't pulling in the MPIs and so forth, and that there was values where there shouldn't be values. So it's not that I couldn't use the third-party software. It's that it wasn't pulling all the information into the batch. Because there is no batch billing for HFS unless you have a software. Otherwise, it's line-by-line direct bill.
Exactly. The collaborative software was not really designed for providers to use it to submit data to HFS. And so if there have been, you know, and we know that there have been some, as I said, some changes to some of the information in the loops. It's not a great deal of changes, but there are some changes. And so the collaborative software has not been modified to be compatible with HFS. You know, again, I would encourage you to call in Wednesday, but, you know, I believe HFS would be looking for would be the submission of data using either software you developed yourself or third-party proprietary software that you've contracted with a vendor to provide you or direct data entry. It's not going to be possible to use the collaborative software for that.
Okay, so you're saying this has nothing to do, and we're no longer going to be able to use the collaborative software?
Or claims. You'll still go into Provider Connect, you know, to submit registrations.
Right, right. I got that part. That wasn't.
Okay, you got it then. Again, I would encourage you to call in on Wednesday or to either call the number that I gave you.
Can you say that number again, please?
Yep, 877-782-5565, press 0. And again, this information is posted on the HFS Community Mental Health website page.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
The next question comes from Gail Waters. Your line is now open.
Hello. I have a couple questions. First of all, we did a reconciliation of all of our claims that were allowed per the collaborative and compared them to what the warrant report showed as being paid. And there were a number of claims that were allowed as one thing, one amount, and paid as another. Where do I go to talk to people about this and how to figure out why there was a difference?
If these are claims that were processed by the collaborative prior to July 1st,
they were,
then you can...
Right. They were claims processed by the collaborative and paid before July 1st.
Okay. Then I would suggest contacting our claims customer service department.
At the collaborative?
Yes. Yep. We can still, even though we're not processing claims currently from July 1st going forward, we can certainly explain to you the processing of any claims that we processed prior to that.
Okay. My second question is about the Medicaid, the ABD clients that are doing going into the ICP. The Medicaid clients, I mean, we have a number of clients that have come in and have either been allocated to one or the other. But if there's a Medicaid client, I mean, should all of the Medicaid clients now for Cook County be registered with one company or the other at this point, do you know?
I don't think we can address that on this call. I'll talk to the DMH contact who is coordinating ICP, and we'll get some information out on that.
Okay. Well, my question, what I want to be really sure about is that I can still bill HFS for these Medicaid clients that do not appear to be with one or the other.
Yep, and that's something that we're going to have to find out. I don't have that info. But, you know, give me your name and number, and perhaps I can have someone call you back directly about that. But I think we'll be putting out info on that.
Okay. My name is Gail Waters.
Uh-huh.
At 847-451-5091.
Okay. Gail, I will pass this information on.
Thank you.
Sure.
And then my third question comes from my biller, who was billing Nights of Care in the collaborative, and we would submit one claim for a month. Say Joe Smith had 30 nights of care for the month of April. We would submit one claim, and we would be done with it. She tells me that now with HFS, we're going to have to submit a separate claim for each day, so we're going to have to submit 30 separate claims. I just want to let you know that this is going to be a huge take a lot more time to bill out these nights of care doing that. Plus, on top of it all, we have to put their address in every time, which we never had to do with the collaborative either. So it's going to take a lot more time to bill out nights of care now.
Well, we're aware of the change in billing. Again, there might be some tips for you. Call in on that Wednesday call when we get a number out to you.
Okay. All right, we'll do that.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Nicole Newstead. Your line is now open.
Hi. I had a question. I don't know if you've already addressed this, about reports for services that we normally used to get through Value Options and that we could run for different things. Is that going to be available through HFS?
It's Mary. Nope, those reports aren't available through HFS, but the collaborative and DMH have been working together. I mean, you'll still have access to the registration reports and then also the claims detail report, although some of that information may change, you know, because you're not submitting claims directly to the collaborative anymore. But the intent is to still make sure that some of those key reports are available.
Okay, and then the other question I had, for services that I need to enter that the service date is before July 1, do I need to use the previous, do I need to use the changes that were made with the new reimbursement guide, or do I have to use the old one since July 1 was sort of the start date, or does it not matter?
After July 1st, all the claims have to comply with the layout that HFS has instituted.
Okay, regardless of the actual date of service.
exactly.
Okay, great. Those were my questions.
Thanks.
The next question comes from Terry Lehman. Your line is now open.
Yes, I have a couple questions. One is regarding Loop 2400 note. You came out with some additional documentation on that, but you said bytes 47 through 63 are space-filled, and then we have the staff-level qualification. But you also said that if a field is not entered, filled with spaces, but in your example, you don't have spaces if the staff-level qualification is missing. Are we supposed to space-fill those also?
So this is Mary. So just a reminder that we're talking here about any claims that were submitted June 30th or prior to the collaborative. Anything submitted after, you know, July 1st or after has to use the layout and the loop that you referred to. And so that is a question that you need to pose to HFS for clarification. And again, the number is 877-782-5565.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
The next question comes from Judy Taylor. Your line is now open.
Hi. I wanted to let everybody know that I talked with Jay Hidalgo about an hour ago, and he asked me to pass on this information that if you have several of those RIN numbers starting with 97, that he would prefer that you email that information to him. Just he needs the RIN number and he needs the client address.
This is Mary.
Uh-huh.
So before you go forward,
uh-huh.
I have to remind everyone on this call, and I've had a chance to communicate with Jay after I got his email, that unless you're sending it encrypted, you cannot, you know, this is personal health information. The RIN is considered personal health information, and a person's address is certainly considered personal health information. And so if you just shoot off an email that's unencrypted, then you're basically going to be faced with a HIPAA violation.
Okay. And that's what he asked me to pass on, so that's what I am doing. Okay.
Understood. Sometimes we don't think of RINs as personal health information, but it is.
Okay, that's it.
And the next question comes from Gong Ming. Your line is now open.
Yes, I just wanted to confirm that the corrections of claims will be done in HFS system. So you mentioned, Dr. Smith, you mentioned that all the corrections of claims will be done in HFS, not on the collaborative. So I just want to, confirm that, because for some reason I have an impression that some of the claims corrections used to be done at the collaborative system. But today, I get a clarification is that the correction of claims will be done at HFS site.
So, Gungman, if there are adjustments, if there is an adjustment, if you have a claim that was, denied or that you need to void, those need to go to HFS.
Yeah. Clark, so that's an adjustment, like, you correct a claim, you void a claim, so that will be down the HFS system. The second thing, could you elaborate a little bit, the email, the communication alert you sent to people regarding the register site, that's even though they are not Medicaid site? Because I got questions from my users, on this issue.
Yes. So prior to claims being submitted directly to HFS, there were some claims that were never passed to HFS, just basically because they were claims that were related to capacity grants such as residential services. And so it may not, it didn't matter if you had a Medicaid ID for that site or not, because that information would come to the collaborative and then be processed, and it would go to the data warehouse for reporting. Now, as you know, all claims are submitted directly to HFS, whether they're for residential services or for fee-for-services or anything. And so in order for those claims to be processed, every site must have the Medicaid ID, you know, which is basically the FEIN and the site number. And so if you have, you know, we checked, it seemed to us that most agencies had already applied for Medicaid ID numbers. We ran a report to take a look at that. What we're finding out, though, is that because those claims weren't really passed to HFS, you know, if you didn't do any fee-for-service billing for any of for a site for 18 months or more, that ID number may have become inactive. And if it's become inactive, then the claim for example, residential services would be rejected by HFS. And so that's, you know, we were giving folks a heads up that, you know, one, if you don't have a Medicaid ID number for any site for which you're submitting claims, that's any claim, then you need to go through the process of requesting a Medicaid site ID number from HFS. You know, and there are forms on the HFS website. That information would still go to Mark Hayward, and he would pass it over to HFS to assign the numbers. So, you know, also, again, if you have been submitting claims for things like residential services and you haven't submitted a fee-for-service claim from that site for more than 18 months, then an agency would need to check and make sure that site was still active with HFS. And you should be able to do that by checking with the HFS provider unit.
Thank you very much. I also want to just share with you that I've been working with the HFS to submit the revised E37P claims. I actually have one live claim file submitted through Medis system and passed their validation. Okay. And currently they are in the process of finding what the result of their claim in the adjudication process. I basically was told to, you know, temporarily, you know, hold my claims. So there is quite some parameter changes. Like we talk about a Medicaid site, it turns out that we probably have to submit one E37P, you know, per Medicaid site. That's different from the process with a collaborative. So that's something I just wanted to share with you. Of course, I will bring more, ask more questions next Wednesday regarding, you know, how, when, because right now I tell all the 50 agencies I'm working with a temporary hold until my claims, you know, went through okay. So on Wednesday, I don't know whether they're going to talk about it just like direct entry, or they can talk about batch claims. So, but we find out.
Okay. Well, thanks for. I'm glad you're working to make sure your claims are going through. So, yeah, I'm sure they'll talk about batch and direct data entry. I think part of the format will be questions and answers.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gongmin.
And at this time, I show no further questions in queue.
Again, Aubrey, we'll wait another few minutes to see if any final questions come through the queue.
Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1.
Okay, if there are no more questions in the queue, then that will conclude our call for this afternoon. I would like to remind the listening audience that today's call audio will be posted on the Provider Resources heading on the Provider Information page of the Collaborative's website. This is posted in MP3 format for your download and should be there within 2 to 3 business days. So with that said, I'd like to thank everyone for joining the call this afternoon. And Aubrey, if you would, please push the speakers through to post-conference, and you may now disconnect the main line.